Hey, Pardon My Take listeners. You can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
On today's Pardon My Take, we have Brett Favre on the show. Hall of Famer Brett Favre on the show. I can't believe it. I'm sure people who are listening to this right now can't believe it, but it finally happened. We have Brett Favre on the show. We have college basketball wild night. We have J.J. Watt going to the Cardinals. What were you going to say, Hank?
You said two Hall of Fames on the other day. What was the second one?
I'm sure he's in the Mississippi State Hall of Fame.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay.
And personal Hall of Fame of quarterbacks I dislike, who also seem like they kind of could be cool guys if they didn't play for the Packers. So that's part
Jeans,
of the Hall of Fame.
Jeans commercial Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Copperfit Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. We have college basketball. We have J.J. Watt. We have guys on chicks.
Whether you're searching for a home to buy or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can find the home that's just right for you. You can favorite homes, share listings with others, and even schedule tours with a local Redfin agent all in the app. When you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. So download the Redfin app today to get started.
Let's go. Welcome to Part of My Take, presented by...
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Today is Wednesday, March 3rd. And Illinois is officially the number one team in the country, according to my power rankings. What a night in college basketball.
If they beat the best team in the country, Michigan, then they deserve to be number one. I agree. I'd have Michigan at number two. The Baylor game, we can get to that in a little bit. But if you go to overtime, I feel like you should drop in the rankings. That should be reflected on the back end. So, yeah, I like Illinois number one, Michigan number two, and then the rest kind of just shakes out from there. So it's a two-team tournament this year.
A lot of people were coming at me because of my Michigan number one ranking. I want everyone to understand that the rankings are not predictive. They're reactive. So I reacted to the last week. Illinois was number two in my rankings. They absolutely kicked the shit out of Michigan, which no IO. They go in there. Ewing theory, I don't even know if you want to do it. I think it might actually just be the Doug Gottlieb theory. He tweeted right before tip-off. He was like, no IO tonight. Michigan has too many dudes. Take Michigan big. And then it was like the complete opposite happened. But either way, so I want to say this for real, though, because I obviously am partly trolling with my rankings, even though I do believe them. Gonzaga is a really, really good team. Gonzaga played and beat a lot of really good teams before conference schedule. I do think, though, a night like tonight is a perfect example. When you play in a big boy conference, it's hard to get up every single night. It's hard to get up three times a week or twice a week, and there will be weird nights like tonight. Like, Illinois played absolutely incredible. Michigan is not as bad as they looked, and those things happen when you play in the Big 12 or the ACC or the Big 10 or the SEC, and you have to play night in and night out against really good competition. So it was a great night of college basketball.
It was awesome. And what you're getting at with that game is, like, it did actually look like Illinois wanted it more tonight, which is it's the most hilarious analysis that you can give of a game, because all of my worst coaches on my worst teams, that's how they would analyze losses when I was, like, playing youth sports. It's like, oh, the other team wanted it more. That's why you guys lost. They got bodied tonight. They got bodied. Like, I just looked up the rebounding totals. I think it was like 45 to 26 or something like that. Michigan didn't look like they were trying to get physical tonight. So,
Coburn is something has clicked with him in the last month, and he is playing like he has figured out that he is just a monster and he can do whatever he wants. And his interior defense has taken a different level. And I just, Illinois, I mean, I they were my number two ranked team going into tonight. So I thought they were very good, but they were very, very impressive. And again, I think Gonzaga probably will win the tournament. They probably are going to win the tournament, whatever. I'm just telling you that I reward teams that have to play tough competition every single week and every single night. And Michigan looked like a team that was coming off three emotional games in a row and a gauntlet, and then they get to Illinois and they came out flat and they looked – and you get exposed like that when you play against a good team.
Mm-hmm. We won't say Hunter Dickinson's name on this podcast until he wins another game.
There we
How
go.
About that? How about that? You can't read the press clippings. Illinois, they they played really well today. They're such a fun team to watch. I didn't realize how fun Illinois was to watch until
when their best players out.
Yeah, until the last week. They're a very, very fun team. I like I think Georgia Tech is a team, they beat Duke tonight, but they have some really shitty losses. I couldn't believe I was looking at their schedule. Because, you haven't heard Georgia Tech talked about as being a good team because they're not really that great. But they've beaten a lot of good teams, and they've lost to a lot of really shitty teams. So they're, they're super confusing.
Well, the ACC is like that overall. The ACC has had a down year overall. The ACC basically has Florida State and Virginia, and then it has a lot of, the UNC up and down, Duke up and down, Georgia Tech up and down. Pittsburgh has looked good at times, but then really bad NC State. So that's kind of been the MO for the entire ACC. Am I missing anyone, Jake? I think that's pretty – that's kind of
– Syracuse and Louisville are out around the bubble too.
They're a perfect example of what I'm saying too, of the up and down teams in the ACC. Yeah. The ACC has had if you look at the entire ACC the entire season, you could pick a point in the calendar and be like, ooh, they look like a tournament team, and then the next week they don't.
100%.
And that's pretty much the entire ACC.
It's FSU's conference to lose.
Yes. So the Baylor win was huge. Unbelievable, especially when it looked like they were going to lose that game in regulation. And their first conference title in 71 years, which is insane, but also makes sense because you play in a conference with Kansas. Mm-hmm. And Duke is officially – Hank, do you want to have a post-mortem? Posthumously talk about Duke. They're out.
I mean, my only takeaway is basically that it's better to do this now than in the middle of March when this probably would have stung a little bit more. I don't know who the ref was. People were tweeting me I said it was a ref show because some of those calls on Matthew Hurt were a little bit questionable. Apparently that ref likes to make it all about himself. But either way,
that's Duke college ref. Yeah,
Duke had their chances down the stretch, and they just didn't look like a team that was going to do any damage in the tournament anyway. So why even bother? Just cut the cord.
I actually agree with that. I think that not making the tournament is actually way better for Duke than making the tournament and getting skunked in the first round, just getting blown out of the game.
I'm not disagreeing.
COVID year.
Coach, oh, it's TV Teddy. Ted Valentine called the game.
Oh, yeah. And of course it was. Yeah. He literally is just there so that everyone will watch him. I'm going to disagree with that just because if you're Duke, you have – how many years in a row has it been?
Two.
No. How many years in a row have they gone to the tournament? They haven't had a missed tournament in how
96?
Long?
96? 1996.
That means something.
I'm checking.
When Wisconsin didn't go to the tournament a few years ago, I was bummed out. I think that when you go to the tournament every single year, there's a little bit of pride for that.
95.
There it is. So I think that not going to the tournament, Hank, you can't – you're Duke.
It's a COVID year, dude. It's a COVID year.
The tournament. You can't miss the tournament.
Asterisk on this whole year anyway.
Any other team, and it's okay. But if you're Duke, you cannot miss the tournament.
No,
I would agree with you.
I think it's a little bit different this year. Don't get me wrong. Duke should have made the tournament with all the talent that they have and Coach K being allegedly – we were told that Coach K was the best coach in the nation. That's my favorite thing to say, by the way, is we were told this, and then you can just say whatever afterwards and then argue against that straw man. But it is bad for Duke not to make the tournament. But if you're going to pick a year to do it, this is without it. And well, it is 2 years in a row because remember they withdrew last year before it was canceled. But it's way better than that you have to do it this year than if it was a normal year.
No, I think if you asked most Duke fans, they'd rather make the tournament and lose in the first round than not make the tournament.
Which is still on the table.
Because you are Duke. You can't miss the tournament. That actually means something to not have missed a tournament since 1995. That's crazy.
The ending of the West Virginia Baylor game was that's college basketball in a nutshell.
Agreed.
That game was over like seven times, or it should have been over seven times. It's the foul shooting. Like, I, you know what I'm going to do this year, I think, in the tournament? I'm just going to bet against the spread on the team that shoots better foul shots, like the team that has a higher percentage, just blindly in the first round. Because when it comes down to nut-cutting time, when it's a big game, and if it's in the tournament, like, there's nerves absolutely become a factor for the worst foul shooting teams.
Well, it's not even foul. It's foul shooting, but it's also – you know, when you have college kids making decisions at the end of games, you saw the exact same thing in Georgia Tech, and like you can't get the ball in bounds, so you say, hey, fuck it, I'm just going to chuck it halfway down the court, and nothing good ever happens with that. And it's just, oh, Billy, fuck you. I just noticed Billy's got the 69 ping pong ball right in our face.
Oh,
you Billy. Asshole. You asshole.
You know what I thought? I thought that was like a little on-screen text that Billy edited in there somehow.
No, he was pointing to it. That's why I lost my train of thought, because he kept on pointing to it. Either way, awesome night of hoops. Shout out, by the way, the Horizon League. The Horizon League, I've long time said that is maction for basketball. It exists just for basketball. Cleveland State, Northern Kentucky, Milwaukee, Wright State, Youngstown State, all these teams. There was four games in the Horizon League tournament tonight. Three out of four of them went to overtime. One of them went to triple overtime. And the biggest margin of victory was four. The only game that didn't go to overtime was a one-point game. It was crazy. It was absolute insanity in the Horizon League. So shout out the Horizon League for giving us a great night of hoops. And, I just love this time of year. I get all the TVs going. I just fucking eating up hoops left and right.
It's great. I'm excited. And like, I joke about not getting into college basketball until the very last week of February. So I can say that it's not just because of March, but
I was going to say, when you said, I realized like a week ago that Illinois was good. I was like, well, is that,
that's when I started watching.
The first time you watched them, right?
I was like, wait, is D Miller not on the team anymore? No, I mean, I get really into college basketball for these 6 weeks of the year, which what's up?
D Brown.
Yeah, my bad. But I get really into college basketball for these 6 weeks of the year, which I think is like maybe 1 week more than most of America gets into it. But it's different. It gets your blood going late at night, and there's always another game on, which is incredible.
Yeah. So we also have J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt got shocked the world, signs with the Arizona Cardinals. No one expected it. I love these signings when not even like Schefter was surprised. Rappaport was surprised. All the insiders were surprised. J.J. Watt is signing with the Cardinals. I just assume it's the most money. Like, we just say that? Like,
it is.
It's the most guaranteed money. I know Kyler Murray and all this stuff. I think it's the most guaranteed money, and he probably just didn't want to play in the cold.
Yeah, that's it. It literally was the most guaranteed money. I think Cleveland was right around Buffalo, and they're in the 15 million neighborhood, 14, 15 million. And so he's like, you know what? I'd rather go not live on the shores of Lake Erie. I'd rather go to Lake Havasu instead of Lake Erie and collect that extra million or so. And it does make a difference, like $1 million, $2 million a year.
Yes.
On a 2-year deal. Like, yeah, JJ Watt's made a lot of money, but he's nearing the end of his career. And he's obviously going to take if he's not going to take a discount to play with his brothers, he's not going to take a discount to play for the Bills at this point.
Why would you take a discount? Yeah, I never understood people who are like, hey, I guess if it was maybe 3 years from now and J.J. Watt was literally a shell of himself, but this is a 32-year-old guy who has one last chance to make a ton of money. Because even if he went into a career of media, right, afterwards, he's not going to make this money. Like, not every – like, how many media jobs are out there? How many guys are getting Tony Romo money? One. Mm-hmm. So, this is his last opportunity, and it's just baffling when people are like, wow, why wouldn't he go chase a ring? It's like, because rings are not guaranteed, and I don't know. If someone's offering you $7 million more, whatever it may be, I'd probably take it.
It was one of those slap your forehead moments, because when he signed with the Cardinals, everybody was like, wait, why is he going to the Cardinals? Well, yeah, it's obviously money is one, but also his former defensive coach, Vance Joseph, is there.
Right.
And so that was like, oh, yeah, we probably all should have spent more time talking about that and less time talking about his Peloton, trying to figure that out, which that was a hilarious moment when people were saying, like, it's down to Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Buffalo because of his Peloton account, which was fake. a fake Peloton account was breaking news about where JJ Watt was going to go, which is that's the whitest possible thing. Like a parody account on Peloton, move over Hamilton tattoos. That it doesn't get whiter than that.
Not only that, but we had already ruled out Pittsburgh. Like Pittsburgh had already said we're not in the running.
Yeah.
So it was we got duped by something that couldn't have even been possibly true. I'm watching right now Purdue. I can't stand the fact that Purdue just grows 8-footers. They just have fucking the tallest dude always at center who just is 5 feet taller than everyone else.
One of them transferred to BYU, the guy.
Yes, Harms. Yes, Matt Harms. Yeah.
Purdue always has – they always have tall guys, and Pittsburgh always has the, like, the biggest ass in college basketball on their team.
Fucking sucks. All right, so the
I do like the move for the Cardinals defense, though, like, from a football standpoint. Like, yeah. if you get 80% of J.J. Watt, like, I looked up the stats. Cardinals, they were 10th in DVOA last year, but I don't know. I don't want to say DVOA. Like, I use DVOA plus – which is just DVOA plus whatever my gut feel is about that defense. And my gut feel is they were kind of candy ass. And have like in that division, if you can hit the quarterback, like if you can hit Russell Wilson, you can beat the Seahawks twice a year.
Well, he might not be in that division. Their defense might be better. They still have Cliff Kingsbury as their coach. So I don't believe in them.
Yeah. No, that's
sorry. Sorry. Not point. Sorry.
I also don't get the whole, like, everyone out there that's like, oh, everyone wants to retire in Arizona. I don't want to retire in Arizona. It's way too hot. Hank, why are you shaking? Arizona's great. If
you guys just hate like nice weather.
No,
I would retire in Arizona.
It's like 110 degrees. It's great if you like dry heat. Sweating on a golf course owned by Dan Marley with like four retired car dealer owners in front of you.
Then going I'd home retire and like, in jumping Arizona. In your pool.
Yeah. Kill a couple scorpions.
Yeah.
Get a little dust in your beer. I'd retire in Arizona. Retire in Arizona before I retired in Florida. And Arizona has Portillo's.
Boom. Depends on what part of Florida.
Yeah, the panhandle.
Yeah, fair. That's fair. if you say anything bad about Orlando and the medieval times that they have, Orlando, that's the goal.
The last thing I had with JJ Watt was, it was hilarious. Seeing the people being like, we didn't even want him. That one guy who tweeted like, from an inside source in the Texans facility, JJ Watt's a me first guy and doesn't even, you know, all he cares about himself is like, oh, that had nothing to do with the fact that you didn't get him. And then the t-shirt thing, which Hank, I know you loved. J.J. Watt had 5 T-shirts of his 5 finalists sent to a friend because he was worried that the FedEx or the UPS person was going to leak it. And I respect that he was keeping the secret.
Hank, you actually fell for the Peloton thing. You were like, I can't believe that J.J.'s doing this. Like, what a drama.
I just said, come on.
It's just sad that you're biased.
What do you want me to do?
You're biased against J.J. Watt.
Supposed to be a big J. Like,
it's disgusting.
How about the guy?
How about the guy whose number JJ Watt's stealing?
I know. Arizona. Yes.
So this guy,
no respect. He's dead, isn't he?
World War II veteran.
He fought in the Pacific. He's probably one of the guys in the Iwo Jima statue. My God. He's probably one of those guys.
Get ready for the longest Instagram caption of your fucking life once it gets official.
So he took 99 respecting
troops.
From that guy. Yeah, JJ, just take number 40.
For selfish reasons, yes. I mean, seriously, though.
Hank, you're such a hater.
No, it's just like, I respect the troops.
Before we do Hot Seat Cool Throne, PFT, do we have to have an intervention, or are you good?
About what?
You know what about.
I actually don't know what you're talking about.
Responding to a certain someone on Twitter that I said you were going to do?
Yeah, well... I unshunned him, then I reshunned him like Dwight Schrute on The Office. So, I mean, he's out here running his lips, talking all this shit, saying like I'm ducking him.
I knew you couldn't resist.
That I'm using the company to duck him. It's like, no, Darren, you just wanted – got his name, please.
You couldn't resist.
$2 million. You just came up with $2 million out of the air. And then my boss has said, no, we don't want to pay Darren Revelle any dollars. We want to pay him $0. We don't want to do a financial transaction with Darren Revelle because he's a loser. And so now Darren's like, why are you hiding behind your company? They can make $5 to $7 million easy off it. And so I told Darren, if it's that lucrative of a business proposition, Darren, sounds like you should probably put the fight on yourself and I'll show up for free.
You just pull up with a and Vanny Woodhead and just kidnap.
That is a checkmate. If we're going to jump Darren Revelle, I would hop in the car.
I did good, though, Big Cat. No, you didn't.
You responded to him.
But I lasted like 3 weeks.
We went through the whole PFT.
Yeah, we went through this.
I was like, PFT, theoretically, Darren Revelle tweets you. What are you going to do?
Yeah, we did like live practice, and you just got on the field and threw an interception right away. You saw like the first pass rush, and you just threw it right into a guy.
It looked too good. I couldn't help myself because he was coming at me. So I will no longer be replying to any.
Okay, great. Darren Revelle tweets.
My conditions for this fight are clear.
We need to get you tokens. Fucking.
We should.
One month of not tweeting it.
I should go
to. We need to take something away from you that you love every time you do it.
No, you can't punish me. It has to be like a 12-step program. What's step one? I'll start tonight.
Not responding to Darren Revelle.
No, 12-step program. Let's see. I'm looking it up right now.
Oh, man.
12-step program steps.
I think it's acceptance, denial. Yeah, you're in denial.
You're talking about grieving, Hank. Those are the steps of grief.
Yeah.
12-step program. What are each of the 12? Honesty. Step one.
You haven't been honest with yourself.
Is honesty. Recovery can begin with one simple admission of being powerless.
There it is. Or something. There it is. You haven't done that. You just said, I won't respond to him anymore. Real honesty is, I am powerless to responding to Darren Revelle. It will probably happen again.
I can stop anytime that I want.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Okay. Hi, my name is PFT.
Hey, PFT.
Hey, PFT.
And I'm a Revelleholic. I can't stop. I'm powerless over myself. I can't stop replying to his tweets.
You also started it yourself.
Yeah.
let's not ignore the fact that
you did that. You tweeted a picture of him. You started the whole thing. He responded to you because you basically were like, hey, I want to talk about Revelle today.
I just thought he looked good as a girl. That's all.
You're obsessed.
Listen, I'm but a man.
I don't want to say
it. Do I not believe?
Part of me thinks he might live a little rent free. He's paying. He's it's rent controlled.
Well, he's
so the rent is like $3,000. He's only paying $900 a month.
It's rent like in that Black Mirror episode where you get it for cheaper if you're brand strong. That's what I give him.
He's living rent controlled in your head right now,
Jake. I just need you know what I'll do. Every time I want to reply to Darren, we have a better version of Darren here. I'll just direct all that energy to Jake.
There you go.
You can direct it to me, but I'm not going to tweet at him because he's still going to get what he wants.
No, don't. This is we're keeping this all in house right now. We're closing circles here.
So, no. This isn't going to work. Yeah, this isn't going to work because you're going to address him and you're going to say it to Jake like you're tweeting. So you're going to start subtweeting him, and it's going to get you off that way to Jake. This isn't going to work.
I start calling Jake what? Darren.
Yeah, you're basically
it. You did it in our group
chat. You just basically found a way to drink like 25 non-alcoholic beers and get
just
drunk.
Just make a burner account, PFT. Do what any adult does.
I should make a burner. That's a great idea, Hank. I'm going to make a burner account. Yeah, have a burner Twitter account. Okay.
Yes.
What if we send him a message and say like promo for the fight? We're going to like do like a WWE pre-scene where he jump out of Manny Woodhead and beat him up and tell him to like come to the place and everything.
We're not going to jump him, Billy. Okay.
And then we actually jump him.
We'll move off that idea. Yeah. Now I'm getting worried that you're actually going to try to jump him. This is the problem sometimes. I like have Billy who actually physically wants to jump Darren Revelle outside of his house. PFT can't stop replying to him. And what – the ship is sinking right now.
Okay. I've got it, though. I've got it under control. Burner account's getting set up tonight. I'm not going to say what the handle is, but it'll be there.
Okay. But if it's obviously you
– it's not going to be obviously me. But I don't have a
problem. It needs to be something that people don't realize so that you can get – it off your chest, but then as soon as people are like, oh, that's PFT, then it's going to – you'll get the attention, and then it becomes a thing. So you have to – it almost has to be completely anonymous.
It will be 100% anonymous. No one will ever know. And here's why it'll be anonymous, because the people who actually
– just set it multiple.
People who actually do reply to Darren's tweets are way meaner to him than I would ever be. Like out of bounds mean to him. So I'll blend in seamlessly.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hot seat, cool throne. Henry, you're looking good today.
Thanks, Big Cat.
No problem.
I gotta get a haircut.
He's not just pumping each other up. I've been in a little bit of a lull, so I'm just like, I don't know. I think it's seasonal.
You know what it is? It's the hat. That's a sweet hat.
Yeah, the hat looks great. The hat looks great. You can buy it at the Barstool Sports store. And I'm also pumping up Billy this week, even though he didn't do Simp Week last week. He just failed to do that, but I am going to reciprocate and actually give him a pump-up week.
I concede.
Be nice to be... What?
I concede. You concede what?
That you didn't...
If it was not be nice to Billy week this week, I would point out that you're not wearing your headphones once again. But it is
not be nice to Billy week, so
it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
not doing that.
It literally doesn't matter.
I concede. Also, Billy's here today, so that's 100% improvement over the course of the week.
Yep.
Really,
be nice
really
to Billy
turned
week.
The corner, Billy.
It feels great being nice to Billy. I love being nice to Billy. Okay, Hank, Henry, good looking stud of a guy, Hank. Now you think I'm fucking with you.
No.
And now I think I'm fucking with you, but I'm not. I think you just actually look good today.
His hair. Hank, is it like curling out at the edges there?
It's flowing. The problem with it is that
it
looks terrible without a hat on, and it's like gone like
it.
3 weeks. No.
Let's see it. Take the hat off, Hank.
No. Screenshots live forever.
Hank, take the hat off.
Absolutely not. I'll take my hat off. You take your glasses off. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Okay. Former Nike VP, Ann Hebert. Crazy story that came out, and the funniest part is that this kid did it all to himself.
Yep.
It's this kid who, his mom is the VP at Nike, so high up, worked at Nike for 25 years, worked her way up, is like the VP running shit. Her son is a sneaker reseller, started a company called West Coast Streetwear, which, you know, classic, gonna start a streetwear company. West Coast Streetwear.
Is that his name?
That's like the car company that Exhibit ran and Pimp My Ride.
Yeah.
He would use his mom's credit card and like bought and like did all this stuff to buy all of the sneaker releases like before they come so people can buy them, and they would resell them at a price, make money off it. No one knew that his mom was the VP of Nike. He went out of his way basically to do a story and like tell all this information to Bloomberg.
Yep.
And called the Bloomberg reporter one time to like ask about the story, and because his mom paid the cell phone bill, her name showed up on the caller ID, which made the reporter obviously like, that's interesting, looked it up, connected dots, put it together. And then so the story that the kid was just trying to like gas himself up basically, it was just all ego, like he was just trying to get press for himself, ended up like getting like fucked his mom over. His mom had to quit. And like exposed the entire Nike industry.
Good.
Streetwear resell business. And like it's all just because this kid had a huge ego and was trying to like... free press.
It's the perfect story for 2021. This kid paid for Bloomberg to write a story about him where his, you know, being like, wow, this guy's such a great entrepreneur. Oh, yeah, forgot to mention that your mom's a fucking higher-up C-suite person at Nike. Like, it's just perfect.
So was he using her position to get the shoes early to win the auctions?
Well, so...
Because all I know, I don't think anyone ever actually wins a sneakers auction, because I swear to God, I've never seen anybody be like, this is awesome, I just won. It's always like, fuck me, why am I doing this? I waste another Saturday morning.
So there were two things. One is that he was pretending that he was like this big entrepreneur, and like, wow, like, you know.
He does sound like he's got a good business plan.
I'm doing it all on my own, grinding out here. He was using his mom's credit card. And there was also, he quote unquote, found three Marty McFly shoes in a warehouse in Oregon. Like, just happened upon them, these super, super expensive shoes. And they think, like, that was clearly his mom just giving them to him.
Yeah. So
he's the whole thing.
He was using bots that were illegal. And then he was also basically, like, conveniently, he had... you know, information about when shoes were going to be taken off the market forever. So it's like he would be able to buy those shoes before they got taken off the market. And then once they get taken off the market, they're worth a lot more. So in this article, basically, he was like, well, you know, if you live in Portland area, there's so many Nike and Adidas execs. It's just a good place to sell shoes. Like, if you know the right people.
Okay, he's saying,
not mentioning the fact that the right people was his fucking mom.
He's like, this is information you could glean by just hanging out in a coffee shop in Portland, because everyone's talking about these shoes and when they're going to go on sale. But his mom's saying that she had nothing to do with it.
No, his mom quit.
For 25 years.
He was using her credit card.
But is this her retirement plan?
Her dad. I mean, that's the thing. It's like,
he better sell some fucking Jordan
1s. He better hope that he was involved. Her mom was involved, because otherwise, like, that kid's screwed for life. Like, if her mom was taking a cut or whatever, then they're in it together. But there's a good chance that he just fucked his mom over in her entire career.
When cloud chasing goes wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It said he was making $250,000 a month. She better have had something to do
God
with it.
Damn.
I mean, a Discord
like,
channel.
It's like a young kid who has like probably $10 million.
I'm just going to say this. I kind of like this kid.
No.
The kid saw an opportunity.
No.
And he maximized his earning potential.
Wrong.
Stealing
his mom's money?
Yeah, exactly.
No, he rented out his own warehouse.
Dude, that kid is a fucking CEO boss.
No, but
this was like posting shit online about like he had no help and like he was like it's all self-made. Like he was putting out that he was a self-made entrepreneur of like it's like he had all the money came from his mom.
He's
and he had all the inside information.
I mean, he's the reason PFT.
Every other rich person's parents had money. That's how they became rich. He stole it.
But he's the reason why you don't win sneakers auctions. Like these type of people who are basically gaming the system with bots, it ruins it for everyone else. It sucks. I'm happy that this kid got exposed and maybe like regular people can start buying shoes.
I don't fuck around with these made up marketplaces like sneakers. I spend my money on solid investments like Dogecoin and Alex Caruso gifts.
Fuck this kid. I'm so happy. It was such a great story, especially the fact that he like sought out Bloomberg to do the story about him.
And the fact that he's making hundreds of thousands of dollars a month, but his mom is still paying his phone bill, which is like the smoking gun of how he got caught.
He had this one, I saw this one picture of like all these shoe boxes that he had on his deck where he had, I don't know, it was probably 500 shoes that he's just marking up and ripping people off. Oh, it was beautiful story.
Like it got to be too much where it's like a warehouse. He was almost running his own like
sneakers,
shoe store.
Yeah,
like
right.
He literally had no more room.
Right. You are now at the point it's almost as if like a ticket scalper bought 60,000 seats to a football game. It's like, well, what the fuck, dude? No one can go to this game now.
It's sad to see you guys not respecting the grind of a youngster out there.
No, I love this story. It was so great to see this kid get it. All right, what's your cool drone?
My cool throne, I have a couple. First one, Jason Sudeikis. He won Best Actor for Ted Lasso. I just watched the show this weekend. So
great,
it was
delightful.
It was one of those things where, you know, you watch the show over the weekend, and all of a sudden, boom, Golden Globes, he wins. It's like, good for Jason.
Yeah.
Although I don't know why
show.
He hasn't come on the show at any point.
It's
right up our alley.
Ted Lasso is one of those shows that I sat down and started watching it. I wanted to hate it.
It was goofy.
I wanted to hate it because I was like, this is a commercial.
It's corny.
They're turning a commercial into a full-length show. And it ended up it warmed my ice-cold, tiny little heart. I felt good after watching every episode. It's so rare to find something in 2021 that you consume and you actually feel better about the world after watching it. And Ted Lasso is one of those things. Although I didn't like the play that he drew up at the end, the football play.
I have to finish the last one.
I won't. No spoilers.
No spoilers. It's the most meta show ever because you start it and you're like, this is the corniest, most obnoxious thing ever, and then you fall in love with Ted Lasso just like everyone falls in love with Ted Lasso.
Yeah,
they like, do it to you.
It was goofy, and then I was like crying. I was crying at points.
It's incredible.
They
broke through the television screen because I think everyone had the exact same experience. We're like, whoa, this is corny. It's a fucking commercial made into a show. Oh, wait. I love Ted Lasso. I wish Ted Lasso was my dad.
Yeah, well, by the end of it, I was like, I would like for the Washington football team to hire Ted Lasso.
Yes.
Right? Like, you can't convince me that Ted Lasso couldn't take the Jets to 10-6.
Yeah.
And then in his acceptance speech, I don't think he was expecting to win because he won. And then he was like, took him like 10 assault. I mean, you only have like a minute in those awards ceremonies.
Oh, he was high as shit.
He looked like he was enjoying some 3-chi.
It took him like 5 minutes to get his thoughts together.
He also
3-chi, but you think you're just going to be sitting there like waving, and then all of a sudden you get called on, and you're like, oh, I have to speak. This is bad.
He won though that award show not only because he won the award, but the fact that he didn't dress up like the losers who got in their tuxes. Like, dude, this is the one year where you don't have to dress up. Be a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to. The most abnormal thing you can do is dressing up in a tuxedo in your own home and then hopping on a Zoom.
Yeah.
Like, just be yourself. And so seeing him and then Don Cheadle telling him to wrap it up in his tux, you're like, all right, Jason Sudeikis won this because he's just hanging out on a Sunday night.
It also would have been sick if he was wearing like a suit top and then just no pants and he stood up to accept the award in his underwear. That would have been cool too, but it's one of the best shows that I've seen on television like the last 3 years.
It's very good. Very good.
I'm simping for Ted Lasso hard over here.
All right, your hot seat, cool tour on PFD?
My hot seat is unpaid internships.
Mm.
Unpaid internships on the hot seat. Billy is paid. I don't like that look on your face, Billy. We pay you handsomely.
The look is because you stole one of his hot seat cool throws.
Okay. All right, we pay you in rabbit meat on a biweekly basis, so you're paid handsomely. But Jane Slater, full disclosure, she's a friend. I like Jane. I think she's a very nice person. And she tweeted out yesterday that she was looking for an unpaid intern for her friend or for like an acquaintance who was setting up some sort of like digital media thing. It was going to be like a part-time thing for a student who was still in college. And Twitter came down on her with the heat of a thousand suns and just did not stop. And I think like it became a thing where some people were using the excuse to talk about to like backlash against the backlash to be like, this is how hard I grinded on my way up. You know, like I worked 10 hours a day unpaid and walked uphill both ways to it. And certainly there's like a lot of hard work that goes into where we got at this point. But I'm not going to sit here and act like it's not because we're hot. Like at the end of the day, like we slept our way to the top like anybody else. But people were saying like we that unpaid internships are like the worst thing on earth. And it is actually like it sucks. Unpaid internships suck. It's not really fair for people that can't afford to take them. But it became one of those things where it was just a day of dunking on Twitter. I felt bad for her at the end of the day. But some of the people were making a good point, which is like, hey, if you can afford, like Big Cat was saying earlier, the NFL was looking for unpaid interns.
Yeah, the NFL can afford it.
If you can afford to pay interns, you should probably pay interns.
I just wonder. I totally agree that you internship should be paid. We've passed that. You know what I mean? Like 10 years ago, that's how it was. That you could get there was unpaid internships everywhere. And my take is just because it sucked for some people doesn't mean it should suck for everyone. Like we should move forward and be like, hey, if you're doing work, if you're doing a service, you should get paid for it. But I love when everyone just makes the same point on Twitter, just and like continually dunks on someone or dunks on a topic, and it's like you guys aren't doing anything. You're talking to no one. You're just shouting into a void. Someday you're gonna realize this was all worthless.
Yes. Yeah. It was a day on Twitter that I felt worse after. Spending online.
Right. I read it. I was just like, this kind of sucks.
I was like I gotta go home and watch it. Ted Lasso.
The point's not wrong. It's just. It's obnoxious when everyone makes it over and over trying to be like, here's how right I am.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Billy?
In defense of unpaid internships.
Uh-oh.
A lot of people.
No, Billy.
Wait. Right now. I love it, Billy. I love it. Yes, no, this is Billy negotiating.
Wait, if I'm
not negotiating.
This is Billy negotiating in a nutshell. Everybody in the room was like, you should pay interns more. And then Billy's like, actually.
If I were going to be nice to Billy this week, which I am being nice to Billy this week, I'd tell him to shut his mouth right now and not go any further because he's about to dig himself a grave, but go ahead.
A lot of people who are qualified for the unpaid internships are part of institutions, private or public, that provide funding for people who take unpaid internships. Cuts in their vested interest that their students get.
For example, so you're saying like Northwestern University, Medell School of Journalism.
Right.
We pay our students to take unpaid internships.
Exactly.
It's just a matter of where the money is coming from.
Right.
But what about people that don't go to those schools? Like hypothetically, Northwestern, these like elite institutions that you're speaking of, it's free to go there, right?
No.
Okay, so you do have to pay them go there so that they'll pay part of your salary. Right.
So the point, Billy, I think what people were making, and I agree with, but again, it was obnoxious how everyone had to make it over and over and over ad nauseum. But the point I think people are trying to make is that when you have an unpaid internship, you're basically stopping a bunch of people from getting that internship because they can't afford to live with no pay. Whereas some people with a safety net can be like, oh, I'm going to go have an unpaid internship for a year. And, you know, my parents or someone will help me out financially, whether it be rent, food, whatever it may be. So you're basically shutting off an entire group of people who can't afford to take an unpaid internship. Therefore, that's wrong. And I agree with that. Do you get that part?
Yeah. No.
Okay. See? Be nice to Billy. Thank you. Yeah.
Billy's shown a lot of growth, actually. One thing I've noticed about him in the last couple weeks, when he's wrong about something, instead of being like, no, I'm not wrong, and then thinking up new lies to tell you about why he's not wrong, he's actually been like, yeah, my bad. Mm-hmm. I've heard Billy say my bad like 5 times, even though that does make you a beta.
Yeah.
I'm just conceding.
Yeah. They should actually make Twitter, there should just be one boss, like, blue check mark, who just makes the one point and then leaves it.
Magic Johnson.
Like, that's it. There's the point. Instead of a 1,000 journalists all making the same point and talking down to people and then eventually making everyone be like, this kind of sucks.
Yeah, who do you think the boss journalist in America would be?
Peter King.
Peter King. Maybe Peter King, but I feel like Peter gets dunked on a lot too.
He does.
Richard Deitch.
And Peter King definitely is a back in my day guy.
Yeah, Richard Deitch for Canada.
Okay.
Ghost of Walter Cronkite.
There it is.
There you go.
Yeah, perfect.
Start the Twitter account. My cool throne is Chicago Bears hydration levels.
Oh, you stole that from me.
What do you mean I stole that from
you? I was my hot seat cool throne.
Okay, well, we can discuss it together.
Okay.
So the Chicago Bears hired Tom Herman, former Texas head coach, as their special projects coach, meaning he's going to do one of two things. When I hear special projects, which is a hilarious name for an NFL coach that you're hiring, the special projects guy, I think, one, he's either just going to be the full-time Cordarrelle Patterson offensive coordinator, just designing plays nonstop for Cordarrelle, or two, he is just going to be running a 24/7 piss laboratory to make sure that mm-hmm. they're maintaining those elite hydration levels. He's the guy at Texas that put the charts next to the urinals, and it showed, like, on a scale of semen to red, how yellow is your pee, and then depending on what level you were at, that's how good you were going to play that week.
So three, which is actually, I think, the reality of this situation, is Matt Nagy, and it's maybe the first smart thing he's done, is if you hire enough people that you can then pass the blame around to, it might give you a little more time.
That's true. And it's also a great excuse to incept other people. Like when you say, my biggest flaw is I need to get better at delegating. It's great because it makes everybody else think to themselves, that guy works too hard.
Yeah.
That guy's such a damn hard worker. He needs to learn how to not focus on being great at everything all by himself. He needs to hire a couple people and spread it out.
So the interesting, it's really a life comes at you fast moment for Tom Herman, because it was, what, 4 years ago where he was hired at Texas from Houston. He had his business card that said, like, future head coach of Texas.
Yep.
He was the perfect hire. He was the dream hire. He was an A-plus slam dunk. And now he just got invited to the Titanic, and he's like, yes, first class, please.
Well, you don't know that. Maybe he had a special projects coordinator for Chicago Bears business card.
I don't know why you'd want to join this coaching staff. I mean, unless Tom Herman was told that they got Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson, you are signing up for a ship that is sinking.
Basically, his options probably came down to Chicago Bears special projects guy or the guy that cleans Nick Saban's toilets.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know what? I'd rather stay away
from... Take a shot.
Yeah, rather
Maybe
stay
Nick
away from
Foles
Nick's asshole.
Yeah.
Well, that brings to mind another question if you're talking about piss. Like, he might just be hired to design a chamber that's big enough for all of Nick Foles' piss to fit into mm-hmm. so he can analyze it.
It's... Whatever. I just hire as many people as you want. I don't care. Nothing's going
to
change.
I do love that strategy, though, to just be like, I need to, you know, my biggest fault is I need to get better at letting go of things.
Yeah. No, they're going to pass it around. They're going to pass it. It's going to be hot potato in Hallis Hall for the entire year next year, where it's going to be, you know, you do this, you do that. Here, you call plays. All right, what do we want to do? Install here. And then eventually it's going to lead to the same spot, and everyone's going to be like, accountability, communication, blah, blah, blah. Fuck off. All right, I guess I have to, on the fly, I'll change my hot seat, cool throw, and they both got taken. My hot seat is... the 16 game schedule for the NFL, because it looks like we're going to 17, and my cool throne will be the 18 game schedule, because as soon as we go to 17, we're going to go to 18. It's mm-hmm. the greatest, like, sleight of hand that the NFL is doing here, where they're saying 17 games, they're going to do 17 games, and then they're going to be like, well, it's not fair that some teams get more home games than others. We got to go to 18.
Well, 17 games just doesn't sound right. It has to be an even number. You can't just, like, commit to an odd number. That throws everything off. There's
right.
going to be no more teams that are 500 anymore.
Right.
Jeff Fisher is shaking in his boots somewhere.
I saw some of the rules that are going to change. It actually is awesome. So there might be a Monday Night Football playoff game.
Yeah, I like that.
Sick.
Yep.
They're going to do – so the 17th home game is actually going to be decided – it's just going to flip-flop. So 1 year all AFC, 1 year all NFC. And then the extra game that they're going to add, which is very cool, it's going to be who you played last year division-wise. So, like, last year the NFC North played the AFC West, right? Wait, fuck. I can't think.
I've permanently blocked all Chicago Bears games from my brain.
No, we didn't play the Chiefs.
Did you play the Dolphins? Did you play the Jaguars? Did you play
Raiders?
The Ravens?
No, we played the South. We played the South.
Jaguars, Titans.
Yes, we played the Colts. So you'd go top of the NFC North, number one in NFC North. The next year plays the number one in the AFC
South. I like
South.
That. I like that. That's
so
cool.
It's like almost whatever happened last year, and then you match up that way. So you basically get you know, four great games, hypothetically speaking, if all things stay the same. And also we might eventually get to a point where we get the Super Bowl and then President's Day. Mm-hmm. So, which would have happened this year.
Yeah, would have happened this year. That I looked at the calendar and it said that next year it would be the Super Bowl would be the weekend of President's Day.
Perfect.
Which would be incredible. We've all been lobbying for that the day after the Super Bowl to be a national holiday, which it should. No one should be forced to go to work that hungover, ever.
It just makes the winter shorter.
Yeah. Oh, it also cucks Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, too, because like no one's going to celebrate I'm a big President's Day guy. I'm not going to think about them at all.
No, but you have a full day to just talk
full
about the game.
Full day is great.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. And you're right. There's no way that's going to stay at 17
games. No, they got
to
get to 18.
So Winnie the Pooh verbal meme, 17 games. Winnie the Pooh in a top hat and a monocle, 18-game season.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to happen. All right, Billy, your hot seat, cool throne?
I actually have a couple.
Oh!
I was surprised you didn't take any of them. Soulja Boy is Soulja Boy versus the WWE. Soulja Boy commented the rap game is faker than WWE, and now he's in a Twitter war with Randy Orton.
Okay.
Not a great place to be. So, yeah, Soulja Boy versus WWE. Another hot seat was internships. And then
who's on the hot seat?
Soulja Boy. Because every WWE superstar says, get in the ring, man. Let's do this.
Is this a work?
It's not.
It sounds like Soulja Boy has an album coming out soon.
Wrestling's not. I'm not actually. It'd be nice to Billy Week. Not going to say it. I was going to say something about wrestling, whether it's real or fake, but I'm not going to say it.
It's real.
I know. I agree. It's real.
Hot seat, everyone. Deep fakes are getting scarily real.
The Tom Cruise one.
On the golf course?
Yep. We could get deep faked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that I've been deep faked already. Everybody in this room has probably been deep faked at least once.
Just make my cock big, okay?
My deep fake. First cool throne is Dan Campbell.
We're going to do that as a segment, so skip to the next
one. Okay, do you guys know the story about DJ Cooper from 2019?
This is like Billy just open mic now.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Go.
You got a tight five.
I'm being nice.
Well,
yeah.
You
guys hear about this one?
DJ Cooper?
Yeah. Did you hear about it?
Did you hear about it?
No, I didn't.
Well, he was a former Ohio University basketball player who went to play overseas, and he took a drug test, as usual, Federal International Basketball Association. Mm-hmm. He's tested positive for pregnancy.
Mm.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Which is usually a masking agent, correct?
Mm-hmm. No. His girlfriend's piss to pass the drug test. Found out she was pregnant
gets mixed up.
So he got...
Well, it's good news, bad news.
Wait. What if it was a golden shower situation? What if he ingested some of her piss? Then when you piss that piss out, wouldn't your piss then say that you're pregnant? You're pregnant, you can't pee. That's when the water breaks. You pee for the first time. When the baby comes out.
Suspended for fraud and a father.
Ah, nice.
Congratulations.
Nice. Jake, did you have anything we missed?
I have a few.
Oh.
Well, like, for sake of timing, we don't have to do it.
No, it's fine.
Give us your best
Jake.
Ones.
Okay, I'll do one of each. My hot seat is being scared. There was this local San Diego reporter named Jeff McAdam. He was doing a live shot, and there were shots fired behind him, and he did not flinch.
Woo! Big J. Yeah, nice. I saw that.
Yeah, so cool throne would be vacations. There's going to be fully vaccinated cruise out in Israel.
Nice.
Vacations are back.
Can I go?
Okay.
Yes.
Get fully vaccinated.
Yeah, report back.
Yep. Get your shots, Hank.
This is only temporary.
We'll have John Rothstein on soon. Sunday night, Selection Sunday. Everyone keeps asking. Selection Sunday is our Rothstein day.
I am so excited for a summer of being able to be a summer again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bring on the summer.
Year. We missed the whole year. All right. Let's get to our interview. Before we do that, PFT, you had something you want to tell the people?
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And here he is, Brett Favre.
Okay, we now welcome on NFL Hall of Famer Brett Favre. He's got a podcast. It's called Bowling with Favre. You can find it on Podcast One. Thank you for joining us, Brett. We appreciate it. I know everyone probably jokes and asks the question, like, are you really retired? I'm not going to ask that. But I was thinking about what the first question would be. And I was curious, when was the last time you actually had a conversation about potentially coming back after you had finally retired?
After I, after my second year with the Vikings, there was no conversation, not on my end. Now think, I want to say my agent, Bus Cook, received a call from some team, maybe the following year, had a couple of quarterbacks get hurt, but I'm not sure on that. But I knew I was done. I've had enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually wanted, I mean, we can get to this right now. I would love for you to tell that story, the Corey Wooten story, because I just told you before we started that I'm a Bears fan, so you tortured me. But Corey Wooten putting you on the ground on that cold turf. And I watched a video where you basically came to eating a chili dog. Is that right?
Almost. I was one of the few times in my career, when I say a few, maybe one other time where I blacked out, where I was, this one obviously was, it was actually the last play I ever played. And if you can remember back, I mean, it was, the game was played outdoors, University of Minnesota, because the dome had collapsed with too much snow. So the field was, they were done playing. So they didn't think it'd be used until the next year. It was glazed over with, I mean, it was like a hockey rink. And it was one of the more harmless hits that, I don't know, it wasn't even a hit. He really pushed me, slipped on the ice, hit my head. The next thing I know, I wake up, and our trainer, Eric Sugarman, is kind of shaking me a little bit. Say, hey, buddy, you okay? And then I woke up. I actually heard myself snoring, believe it or not. I said, what happened? I didn't feel any pain, just kind of disoriented. And he said, well, you had a concussion. So as with each minute, the fogginess kind of dissipated. And we went straight into the locker room, took a hot shower, walked back out on the field, had a coat on, got me a chili dog and a hot chocolate. And I knew right then and there that I was done. Mm-hmm. There's never a good time. As we know now, concussions are a major, major issue and can lead to serious health issues. Concussions, when I first entered the league, if you even thought about taking a couple of plays off because of a concussion, you were considered a wuss. But that's changed. But I knew the seriousness of the injury and the possible repercussions, if you will. So I knew. I said, you know, I'm telling myself all these things on the sideline. This is, if there was ever a sign, this is it. You know, not to mention I'm in my 20th year. Physically, I started feeling it was starting to take its toll just on everyday wear and tear. And then I get this major concussion. So I said, I'm done. And I never looked back.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite parts of every NFL season is when people would just like toss your name out there. Because I think for the next 5 or 6 years after you retired, it was still like, maybe we could give Brett Favre a call. Like the second a starter got hurt, your name was the first one that would always come up. If it were to happen right now, because I still do like to imagine it, if you had to step in for a weekend, let's say it was a system, let's say it was John Gruden, let's say you went to the Raiders, yeah. you got a Friday install, you got a dozen reps in practice with your center, with your receivers. How many yards could you go out there and throw for on Sunday right now?
I don't know. I probably need a few more, maybe a couple of weeks to kind of get my arm back in shape, which it's not that far out of shape. Don't get me wrong. I'm never going to throw the ball 80 yards like I did back in my prime. But you in a real life football game, you don't throw it 80 yards. You throw it, 2, 3 yards, 5, 10, 15, maybe an occasional 40. But I could do that. They can't promise me they're not going to hit me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I'm 51 years old and I can't complain. I feel probably better than I should, all things considering. So that would be the biggest issue for me. My last year, which was in Minnesota. I knew physically, it finally kind of hit me. You know, I'd be in practice and it was laborious to get through practice. Not that practice was necessarily hard. It was the same, probably easier than it was in my early years because they scaled back, but it was hard to get through it. You know, everything kind of hurt, you know, maybe not terribly bad, but it was like right hip would be hurting along with my left ankle. Mm-hmm. Back of my right shoulder maybe was sore. So, you know, as far as going back to play, I could do it, but I think the repercussions would be, I would regret it, certainly.
Well, the good news is Dr. Heat Greg Williams is probably not going to be a defensive coordinator next year, so you won't have to worry about him busting you up like he did in that Saints-Vikings playoff game. Could you tell, even by Dr. Heat standards, that he was turning up the heat a little bit high in that Bounty Gate game?
I've been asked a lot about that game. Did I have any knowledge or did I feel or sense something out of the ordinary? Yes and no. By no way, shape, or form did I envision that there was a bounty. Now keep in mind, every defensive coordinator within the realms of legality would love to get the starting quarterback out. But in saying that, you know, not purposely going after his leg or, you know, a clean hit, we take the quarterback out, we got a much better chance to win. I mean, doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that makes sense. So with Greg Williams, I mean, I've known Greg a long time, known his defensive philosophy, and he's a blitz guy.
Yep.
He's a no rhyme or reason coach. And what I mean by that is most 99.9% of the coordinators in the league, whether they be offense or defense, they have tendencies. And that's what you study week in and week out. So 3rd and 3 to 6 is broken down into its own category. And coaches have their tendency. They have 33% blitz on that. They play versus a three receiver side. They may play a certain zone. So you know, you play the odds. With Greg Williams, there is no odds. And that makes it difficult in itself to prepare because there's no rhyme or reason why you do, you know, if you blitz this guy, then they have to play this coverage behind it. That's not the case with Greg.
Right.
He'll roll the dice. And so that makes it much more difficult to prepare. So I wasn't really surprised at the looks that I was getting. What I was surprised, and I'll give you an example, Darren Sharper, who was a friend of mine and a teammate for about 7 years in Green Bay, I thought he was an extremely talented safety. He could cover the field like no other, but he wasn't a hitter. He was a good tackler, but he wasn't a big hitter like a Ronnie Lott. Well, in that game against us, in that championship game, he had two. One they called, the one they didn't call that was actually worse. Unsportsmanlike on the quarterback, where he went after my head with his helmet, the crown of his helmet. And it was way late. I'd thrown the ball already. And I thought to myself, now why would Sharper, who's not that type of player, go over and beyond when he didn't need to? And I actually completed both passes and it was two of the better passes I had in the game. It was that type of game. It was, I think they called like 5 roughing the quarterback, but they should have called like 12.
Yeah, that's a strategy in itself. It's like make them call it every time because they're not. So we're going to get away with some of the times that we do it.
I don't hate Greg Williams. It is what it is. We still had a chance to win the game with all that in mind. And when I think about that game, not for a second do I think about how they played against me. It's more what I didn't do at the end of the game. Greg Williams included, the defense included, I still had a chance to make a play to give us a chance to win, and I didn't make it. And that's what I think about in that game.
So you talk about defense and a defensive scheme. I think, you know, the part that everyone loved about Brett Favre, the player, was that there was a feeling that you were improvising a lot of the times, drawing stuff up in the huddle. How much of that was true? Because I know the classic story where you asked, you didn't know what a nickel defense was until your second year. So how much of it was really Brett Favre just being like, all right, you run this route, you run that route, let's just go?
Very little in regards to drawing one up in the dirt from an initial play. Now, breaking the pocket, scrambling around, extending plays, hitting a guy, like one of the greatest passes I've ever had, if not the greatest or maybe fondest, was my first playoff experience at Detroit. The week before we played in Detroit to end the season, the winner of that game got to play. We were playing them in the playoffs the first round regardless. We knew that. Had we lost, we had to come right back the following week into the same environment. And there was no reason to think if we lost that we could come back and play much better the following week at Detroit and win it. Late in the game, it was a two-minute drill, and I called double square out. I had Sterling on the right, and I'm not even sure who I had on the left. And I ended up scrambling to my left. I think kind of knowing your limitations at that time, I didn't think I had any, you know, kind of a naive sense at that age. And just Sterling had a square out. He didn't have a go. And I extended the play. And the one thing the coaches always preach to young quarterbacks is don't throw it late down the middle. Don't throw it across your body, across the field. And that's what I did. And hit Sterling for a touchdown. So that was the ad lib from an extended play.
So you made headlines a couple weeks ago talking about Deshaun Watson. I wanted to ask a follow-up to that. So do you think that it was like maybe a little hypocritical asking about Deshaun or saying Deshaun Watson should kind of just play with the Texans right now, not demand a trade? When you had similar points in your career where you wanted the organization to do something, whether it be, you know, let you go wherever you wanted when you were done with the Packers or maybe not get to training camp. Do you think that like players should maybe get a little more say in today's NFL on player movement if they have been lied to by the organization and they feel like it's, you know, a relationship that can't be fixed?
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I think it's a different, the league looks different today. How they play is different. How they practice is different. Legality, you know, how many times can you practice in pads? I mean, when I was with Atlanta my first year, we never went without pads.
Yeah.
And I was a backup quarterback, and backup quarterbacks today are not live in practice. I mean, that's a joke to even think that. I was live. Jerry Glanville wanted them to kill me. So it's a different game. You know, my situation – regardless of what people may think, I didn't demand a trade. I didn't demand where I went wrong. And the only place I went wrong was retiring or saying I was retiring in April. But there's reasons for that. When I decided I wanted to play again, why would I want to play anywhere else other than the fact that I knew that I wasn't welcome back in Green Bay? Not by the fans. And some teammates, but by the organization. So from that aspect, it's a little bit different. But I don't think a player should be able to demand who they want interviewed or what players they want to pick up or let go. You know, I think that crosses the line. I mean, you think about it with you guys. You go to you've been a team for, you know, just say 10 years. And one's thinking about leaving, and the one who's staying says, well, I want this guy to come in. And the boss says, I'm going to interview who I want to interview, and if you don't like it, you can hit the road. I think that the guys in the league make tons of money. I'm not saying that this right or wrong. It is what it is. And 20 years from now, we're going to be laughing at the salaries that I made and the guys before me made. And it's going to be astronomical, just like it is now, but it's going to continue to go up. That's a given. But I just don't think that it's right for a player to be upset and demand a trade because they didn't interview someone he wanted to interview.
So I think it goes a little bit deeper than that with the Texans organization in particular, where obviously Deshaun Watson is a top – I think he's a top five quarterback in the NFL right now. He's a generational talent.
He's definitely a top five with the young – which there's some very talented young group of quarterbacks, and he's right there in the mix.
Yeah, so I think with a guy like that, if he is the centerpiece of your organization and the front office told him, like, we want to make you a building block of this team. We want to get your feedback on things. We want to build this new franchise around you as we're transitioning from Bill O'Brien. We're bringing in an entire new front office, new head coach. We want your input on that. And then he gave his input, and then they ignored his input. And then things kind of came to like I don't know all the details that happened after that. There apparently it's been building for like the last 3 or 4 years. I feel like in today's NFL, if you have a talent like that and you're an owner, you should know that you need to make that player happy if you want to maximize your chances of that guy winning a Super Bowl for your team in the long run. Because if it's an icy relationship, that goes both ways. The ownership has to take some responsibility for that too. So I'm sure you experienced, you probably butted heads with ownership in your career as well, and you probably found that the most conducive environment for winning football would be when your star player and your ownership and your head coach are all at least on the same page and kind of communicating effectively, whether it's an idea that you have for an offense or, hey, maybe we should interview this guy.
Well, let me go back to what you just mentioned about Deshaun Watson. When I made those comments, I also said, I don't know all the details.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody does besides Deshaun.
And honestly, in fairness to Deshaun or anyone in that situation, it's probably best that I didn't make the comments I made. I made them specifically based on the fact that, again, not knowing the details, which I think obviously is very important. So I'm wrong in respects to making comments without knowing the facts. But if the organization, because what I was going to say before you made those comments, if they ask his advice, it's a different story. Then you're including him in the conversation, whether or not maybe the organization asked his advice just to make him think that he's involved. Fair or not, that's their choosing. But if they say, you know, if Deshaun went to them, they never went to him in particular, and he says, look, why don't you interview this guy or that guy? And they say, we appreciate your advice, but we got this handled. That's their right. But if they ask his advice or ask him to be involved in any shape or form and then ignore him, then I can see where there's a problem. Mm-hmm. Is that enough of a problem to demand a trade? That never happened to me. I got a lot of feedback when J.J. Watt asked for his release. I think that – why don't I comment on that? Well, J.J.'s situation is different. Deshaun, as you said, had become the face in the franchise leader. J.J. Watt was kind of the elder statesman. Not that he's not a leader, because I think he certainly was. But I think both sides had run their course there. I think we all can agree with that. And he wanted to try his hand somewhere else, and I think that they were willing to do that, and they mutually parted. Deshaun's situation, he is the face of that franchise. I agree. I think he's one of the great young quarterbacks in the league, and there's no reason to think that he won't, shatter records and win a championship, if not more than one, whether it be there or somewhere else. My whole deal is if you demand a trade because they didn't listen to your input when they didn't ask for it, I don't want to say that that's wrong or right, but again, in today's game, it's different. You know, who's to say what's right or wrong? But I don't know the facts, so it's really unfair for me to say one way or the other.
Don't you think, though, that the players having more say and fans actually taking players' sides is a good thing for, you know, like, it feels like the transformation in the league, right? So, for example, a Javon Walker situation where, you know, Javon wanted to sit out, and you had comments on that back when it happened. He came back. He tore his ACL. Now, guys, when they say they want to sit out, I think most fans are like, yeah, they should. If they don't get the money they deserve, they should sit out because they're risking a very short career, a very short earning potential for non-guaranteed money. So I think that the conversation is interesting, and it's also just – it's good that we're here where people actually are like, hey, Deshaun kind of can call his shots.
Well, I mean, they both hold the cards.
Right.
And you take it even further, he says he's not playing there. They say they're not budging. How will that – play itself out remains to be seen, but say they trade him. I know, like in my situation, the end with the Packers, and I bring this up because it could happen to Sean. You never know, but I had to go to Green Bay in order to get something accomplished at the start of training camp that year that I was traded to the Jets. So I went up, me and my wife and my agent. And I met with Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson. It was an okay meeting. I went back to my house in Green Bay that same day that I arrived and told Bust, my agent, and my wife what had transpired. And according to the Packers then, there were two teams that were interested in a trade. Were there more? I don't know. This is what I was told, and that was the Jets and the Buccaneers. You know, you choose. So when I left Green Bay, we flew back home that same evening. I had Buzz tell the management with the Packers that I was going to go to the Buccaneers. And the reason that I chose the Buccaneers was Gruden, I knew very well. We were together in Green Bay initially. And the offense was the same. So I didn't have to learn a new offense. And also, which was important to me, we were going to stay in the same conference. I learned to compete against the Packers in the same division or conference. And they played each other. I think it was the third or fourth game that year. So it made sense. So I said, we're going to fly home. Bust told them that, said, we're going to fly home. We're going to talk about it on the way home. But that's where he's looking to go. By the time we flew home, I got to my house, I was traded to the Jets. I could have vetoed it, but said, you know what? If you veto it and say you're not going there, people are going to say, well, what in the heck does he want to do? So they kind of beat me to the punch. Mm-hmm. They tightened their grip on me, in other words. Mm-hmm. That ultimately could happen to Deshaun, that he ends up at a team that he doesn't want to end up with. I wish him well. I think he's a great young talent, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. So during those years that your career was a little bit in flux in the various off seasons, my favorite part was the relationship that you developed from afar with Ed Werder, where they would just send Ed down to your house, have him camp out at the end of your road. I never knew if it was like an adversarial relationship between you and Ed, or if it was like a worthy opponent where you maybe bring him lemonade if it was too hot when he's standing out there at the end of the driveway, or if you guys were good friends. But it seemed like three summers in a row, Ed Werder lived at your house.
Yeah. Let me get this clear. I did not invite Ed down. we sort of grew because of year in, year out saga that went on for several years. We've all had those relationships where you go, I don't know how it happened, but we became friends. And we had a lot to talk about. Most of it was sort of the same topic over and over again. But yeah, every time I think you turned the sprinklers on me, you know, he would accuse me. I said, no, they're on a timer, Eric. Yeah, they're on a timer. I mean, you just happened to be standing in my grass when they came on. Still to this day, we have a chuckle about it. Believe me, I could have done without. It was hard enough to make a decision when I had to find a different way out of my property to avoid the press. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was your favorite prank that you pulled on a teammate or your go-to? Because I think that's, you know, part of – the Brett Favre legend is that you were a guy who didn't take himself too seriously and always had fun playing the game, which True. I think most fans do appreciate that, you know, you're playing a game and it's fun. So what was your go-to prank, or the one that you look back and you're like, yeah, that was a good one. Like, I'm proud of myself for that one.
Boy, there was a bunch, and I'm probably leaving out probably a better one. I think being in Green Bay, when you think Green Bay, you think cold. You know, Green Bay didn't get a lot of snow, but during the season, we got, not during the game, but 1 week we got a lot of snow. But then right after, we got bitter cold where, like, the high was, like, -1, you know, like on a Thursday. You know, and we would practice indoors, though. But the thing about Green Bay is Lambeau Field, the locker rooms that you dress in for games, you also dress for practice. Some teams are different. They have a workout facility separate. They had a fenced-in parking lot right there by the locker room, no problem. But for practice, you had to go down to where the practice fields and the Hudson Center, which is the indoor facility, are located. It's at the end of the parking lot, one below. It's definitely too cold to walk. You know, it's probably a little more than a quarter of a mile from where you park generally to where, and they had a parking area for the Hudson Center. Frank Winters was my center and best friend and roommate. And we'd always goof off and everybody was playing jokes on each other. But I took Frank's car before practice started. So, like, I had a meeting at, say, 9 o'clock. And when I got a break, I had someone, the equipment guys, follow me. I took Frank's car down to the end of the parking lot, left it running with the AC wide open. In 1 degree high temperatures. And this, we didn't go to practice until like 12:50. I think practice started at 1. So you can imagine when he found the car, first of all, when he found it, because he's like, where's my car? But you know, there was this one long car down running. I don't even want to know what the temperature was in that car. And we did that several times with different guys. You know, the guys started locking their car in the gated fence. But we'd dig in their pockets and,
the old cold car. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that one. I like that one. I also read one where I don't know if it was a stink bomb or something with John Madden when he came to interview you before a game. And like,
almost killed him.
Yeah. Brett Favre and John Madden and fake farts is kind of like, that's the pinnacle of football guy humor.
Yeah. I just told that story to someone a couple of nights ago. We got on the subject of John Madden, and they asked me if he was still living, and I said, yes, he is. He's getting up there in age, and they said, boy, he sure liked you. He did. I don't know where the fondness came from. He did a lot of my games, but I know that our production meetings the day before the game was always – it was fun. It was it hardly had football at all involved in the conversation. We just talked about stuff. Tons of those meetings. You can imagine all the games we did. Yeah, this one particular time, I kind of got on the stink bomb. You know, it looks like an ammonia cap.
Yep.
That you break, and it's got a terrible odor of rotten eggs, and it's made of sulfur. And I found all this out after the fact. I just knew they stunk, and I thought it'd be a cool joke to just slip it under the table, step on it, and then watch everyone kind of cringe. And part of the reason that I picked that and setting was Lee Rimmel was our head of PR. Well, Lee Rimmel had been with the Packers for over 50 years, and at the time was probably in his 70s. So he was getting up in age, still sharp, but had a tendency in those production meetings to fall asleep. So I was going to really kind of play a joke on Lee, but with the whole group. So I figured when I busted the ammonia cap and the odor got terrible, that someone would think that Leaf farted in his sleep. And that may have been true had it not been for John Madden. As I ease it under the table, step on it, no one has a clue. Within seconds, I mean, it reeked of just rotten eggs. But John Madden was not the reaction I was thinking. And Jeff Blum and Mark Schieffelbein, when they're with us, and they were the younger PR guys, same age as me, and they encouraged me not to do it before I went in. Just I don't know exactly why, but because it, none of us could foresee what was going to happen. So John starts kind of choking a little bit, and he starts turning red. Now you can sense with each second, it's getting worse and worse, and to a point where this is not funny anymore. And he kind of puts his hand up around his chest and his throat. Long story short, they take him out of the room. Come to find out, he's allergic to sulfur.
Oh, God. He almost killed John Madden.
But he
almost killed John Madden.
He probably laughed about that afterwards.
I was going to say, so every game after that, we walk into production meetings, like, oh, you don't have those sulfur bombs. See? No. John, I don't. I'm sorry.
Who's allergic to sulfur? That's something yeah. you couldn't have drawn that up ahead of time. There's no way to know that.
No.
Absolutely not. So I did listen to your podcast, and I know that you're a Jeopardy fan. I know you watch Jeopardy. Are you going to watch when Aaron Rodgers hosts it?
If I'm not busy, I'll at least tape it. I think he'll do a great job. He's very well spoken and calm, cool, and collective. He'll do a wonderful job. Now, will he be an Alex Trebek? I don't know if there ever will be another Alex Trebek, but I'm sure that they'll get great ratings for that show.
Yeah. So back to your time in Green Bay, you played for Mike McCarthy for a little bit. He became a legend on this show last year when he went to Dallas and he would smash watermelons before select games to amp his team up. He would just like have a watermelon brought
kind
into
of like the Gallagher. Game. Remember Gallagher?
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, the Gallagher sledgehammer.
I lost every bet when Mike McCarthy smashed a watermelon.
People don't talk about Gallagher enough anymore. I'm glad you remember that. But did Mike ever do anything like that? What was his like craziest motivational technique when you were with him in Green Bay?
He was just a status quo coach. And I don't mean that in a negative. He's from Pittsburgh. He's kind of, you know, those guys from Pittsburgh, if you didn't know any better, you'd think they're from New York. You know, hey, you mm-hmm. know, kind of loud, boisterous. That was Mike McCarthy. You know, you getting ready to go out and fight a heavyweight bout. He was giving that speech before you went out there. But he never brought in props that I remember.
Would he send you, have you guys stay at worse hotels if you started sucking? Because I think I've heard that story, that the hotels would get worse and worse on the road.
I think John Kuhn told us that.
Yeah, they would get worse and worse on the road depending on how the team was doing.
No, that never happened with any coach with in my 20 years now.
Okay, we're going to delete that part because we want to have John Kuhn's story be real.
Well, also because he was putting Brett Favre up in the good hotels.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the fullbacks were staying down the street. In the
I don't know where the team stayed. I just know where I stayed.
Yeah, right.
Presidential
you
suite.
Where they were, right. Yeah. What was your favorite Andy Reid story? Andy Reid is obviously a legend, and he was one of your coaches. Let me ask this. Did you know at the time in the 90s when you looked at the coaching staff, you're like, man, these guys are really, really good and there's going to be some head coaches here? Because it is crazy to look back and be like, Andy Reid, John Gruden, Mariucci, Dick Geron was on the staff 1 year. Like all those guys end up being head coaches.
Doug Peterson.
Doug Peterson. Yeah. Like was a quarterback. Did you have that moment where you were like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. Like, I think that we have such a great coaching staff here.
I think, five guys off of that staff, whether it be initial staff or a replacement for one who left for the head coach job, five of those guys became head coaches. You mentioned Dick Tron, head coach at Chicago.
Unfortunately,
Andy,
yeah.
Mooch, Marty Morningwig, Ray Rhodes, and other coaches went on to be successful as well. But no, I think, when you're 22, even though I thought I knew it all then, as I look back, you don't think about things like that you would think about how you would think about them later in your career or life. I knew we had good coaches. I didn't know a good team from a bad team when I became the starter in Green Bay. I thought I did. For me, my success early was not because I was schooled and was up to speed on all the ins and outs of passing games and nickels and dimes, defenses and all that stuff. The secret to my success early was being naive and not knowing how good or how bad the opponent was, or not knowing how good or how bad we were, or not knowing that maybe being risky on a play and rolling to my left and throwing all the way back to the right can get you fired. I just thought that was fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me a lot of one of our favorite quarterbacks on this show, Jameis Winston. He's a guy, he takes a lot of chances. He makes some head-scratching throws, but he has the ability to throw a touchdown from almost anywhere on the field, and he's exciting to watch. Have you gotten the chance to watch him play, and does any of his play remind him of yourself?
Well, I saw his one play this year. It was yep. pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a touchdown.
Perfect rating.
I haven't seen a lot of him. I probably saw more of him when I think about Jameis Winston. I think about college.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a winner. You know, he's not going to scramble like Lamar Jackson, but he's got a wonderful arm. When you have something like that, it's like unbelievable jumping ability, but maybe an okay shooter. You're going to have fantastic dunks that's going to put you on ESPN all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, the telltale stats are a little bit different than the dunks. And that's kind of the way I look with Jameis Winston. If he could ever harness that, and I was able to harness it pretty good based on how I first entered the league, everything to me was a Hail Mary. And it didn't need to be. You know, the check down's okay, Brett. In fact, please throw the check down. If it was 3rd and 20 my first 3-4 years, I was throwing it 20 or 21, if not further.
Yeah.
Every time.
It's interesting because I'm happy you said that, because I do think there is, I always joke about the quarterbacks that are, they don't really understand that they should, what they're doing is wrong. Those are the dangerous quarterbacks. So like, it sounds like that's what you're saying when you were younger. I also always have the theory that not every interception is bad, in that a guy who, you know, when you say gunslinger, you think Brett Favre. And a quarterback taking risks isn't always a bad thing. It's the guys who, you know, when you look at the end of the year and a guy has no interceptions, like, well, he didn't take any risks. It was all checkdowns. He never actually took a shot. And that's easier to defend than a guy who's going to take those risks and try to throw it into spots where maybe sometimes he shouldn't have thrown that.
Well, I'll give you an example. We played the Rams in the playoffs in St. Louis. And I think that year we were like, maybe 8-8. It was Mike Sherman was the head coach. We may have been 9-7. We could possibly have been 10-6, but I don't think so. So we were okay. We were playing the greatest show on turf, and they were. And I mean, they were putting up 40 on everybody. And there's no reason to think that they're not going to put up 40 on us. And so the game sort of went like I thought it was. They got the ball, they scored. We got the ball, we moved it, punt. They got the ball, they scored. So you catch on here. So at some point I went, they'll give me the underneath stuff all day long, but we're going to lose. Even if I take chances and come out on top, you know, on risky throws, we still may lose the game. I wasn't the smartest guy from the start of my career to the end of my career by no means, but I was smart enough to know if I don't take chances, I may complete 60 passes, but we're going to lose by 30. So I started taking chances, and they were up the whole game. Their go-to was Tampa 2, rush with 4, not give any windows to throw it in. Going against that type of scheme, you have to be patient. You have to be willing to go 16 plays and grind it out to get a score. You know, going 16 plays and scoring is hard enough. So I ended up throwing 6 picks in the game. And really the last one, but the last two, they were up like 21. The game is over. Mike Sherman said, hey, man, I think I'm going to take you out. I mean, he wasn't pulling me to put someone in to win the game. It was over.
Right.
And I said to him, just as clear and honest as possible, I said, if you leave me in, I can break a record. Oh, really? 6 picks, I think, will tie the Packer record or NFL. And I don't know if that was true,
mm-hmm.
but it sounded pretty cool to me. Like, if I got 6, you know, I fall in the record books one way or another.
What's the difference between 5 and 6? Yeah, right. 6 sounds a lot cooler.
And the last pick, actually, I said, you know what? I'm just going to take it. I'm going to check it down. And I had a back who's running like a little angle route up the middle of the field. And I just – he was going to catch it and get about 12, maybe break a tackle and get a few more yards. 50 seconds left in the game or something. And he gets tipped by one of the linemen who doesn't rush. And guess what? Picked. I'm like, hell, even when I do the right thing.
Do you have a favorite interception that you ever threw?
There's no question my favorite interception. And I can't believe I'm calling it my favorite interception. But a lot of things happened on this play. kind of like my first completion was to myself.
Yep.
I can say that I had a lot of fun playing, and it doesn't necessarily have to be wins and touchdowns. So we're playing the Giants my first year as a starter in Green Bay. We're playing them in the Meadowlands. They still have several of their guys from the glory days, Lawrence Taylor, Pepper Johnson, but they were, you know, they were getting up in years, but it was a back and forth game. Late in the game, it's pretty chilly at Meadowlands, but not terribly cold. So we run that an angle route, like I was just, the one I was just telling you about. We called it Texas, 22 Texas. And so the fullback comes in, and we had a little change up on this play. So we added 22 Texas halfback burst. So I was going to pump fake the fullback, and the backside back kind of did the same route, but came underneath. And so we're trying to get the backers to converge on the first guy and slip the other guy underneath. It usually was a good play. Well, Pepper Johnson looked as though he was covering the first guy and then fell off at the last second. I probably should have known better with an old crafty vet, but it wasn't like the worst decision I ever made. And it hits him right in the numbers. So I'm young, energetic, full of piss and vinegar at this time in my career. He picks it off and he's kind of maneuvering around. And I'm kind of like the first and last line of defense because it wasn't a deep pass. And so he's dodging and weaving a couple linemen. And I get right close to him to make the tackle. And he kind of turns and looks to his right. And I think he's going to pitch it to one of his guys. So I jump, dive for the ball, and he doesn't pitch it. So I look like a complete idiot. Like, what are you doing? When I realize he doesn't pitch it, I can remember, even though it was a long time ago, I was thinking to myself, you're digging yourself in a deeper hole. So I get up, come up from behind, catch him, punch the ball out, create a fumble, and recover it all at the same time. I'm willing to bet the farm that I am the only person to throw an interception, miss a tackle, cause a fumble, and recover it all in the same play.
We'll look into that.
That's
Jake,
a full day.
Can you look that up? That's like the Jimmy V speech. If you can laugh, cry, yeah, come all in the same day, you did it all. Yeah.
But the tragic news is the very next play, I threw a pick and the guy returns it for a touchdown.
I'm actually watching it right now. It's a hilarious play because he's like spinning around and you just got totally deked out and then you come back and get the fumble. So you're like, yeah. That would be my favorite interception too. Because it is a hilarious, hilarious play.
So the next play, I throw a pick, the guy, and I have a chance to make the tackle on the sidelines. The guy returns it, and he jukes me. And Ty Detmer was my backup quarterback and great friend, and it was funny. He was so funny. I miss the tackle on the sidelines. The guy scores. The game's over. I go sit down on the bench, and it was probably 30, 32 degrees then that day. And I'm sitting on the bench, got my helmet on. So Ty's laughing at me, sitting right next to me, and he's laughing. And I thought it was kind of an odd time to be laughing, but that was Ty. I said, what's so funny? He says, that big snot that's frozen down the side of your face that came out of my nose, and it frozen solid on the side of my face. And I said, gee, thanks, Ty.
Yeah, that's a nice insult to injury. All right, so my last question, can you actually tell the Ty Detmer nickel defense story? That would be my last question. It's such a great story. Yeah,
typical Ty fashion. You know, he's sarcastic, very bright mind. Football, he had football intelligence out this world. Keep in mind, he won the Heisman. He threw 120 touchdowns in college. He knew the passing offense better than anyone. And here I am, the starter, but don't know anything, but acting like I know it all. You know, I hear him say in meetings all the time, "Well, they bring a nickel in, dime in." And I thought to myself, I couldn't see what the difference was really. So that's why I really never asked. And it didn't bother me a whole lot, but it just ate at me and ate at me till finally I said, I got to ask. So I said, Ty, you know, I hear them talk about bringing nickel in and dime and all that stuff. I mean, what is it? I mean, what am I not getting? And he goes, well, it's when they take out a linebacker and bring in a DB. And I said, that's it. They're making a big deal about nickels in, nickels in, nickels in. And he said, that's it. I go, who gives a damn? No wonder I had success against nickel defense.
So what did you think it was called? Did you have a name for it? Were you just like to bring the small guy out there?
I didn't care. It's 11 on 11.
Yeah.
You know, and I found throughout my career and even before then in college, don't judge a book by its cover. So what if they're taking a 250-pound linebacker out, bringing in a 190-pound defensive back? He may be a better tackler than the 250-pound guy. Mm-hmm. I never cared. There were some things in meetings that I didn't pay attention to, and that was one of them.
I love it.
All right, so my last question is the Roback question. Use code PMT on roback.com for 20% off your first purchase, ROBACK.com. And for our guest today, we'd like to gift you a Roback Performance Q-Zip on us, so we're going to send you one. Do you think that it's maybe a little much at this point, like the Packers having back-to-back MVP and Hall of Fame quarterbacks? Can you give us a break? Are you like, I'm done with it. I hated you your entire career. Like, Rodgers is the same shit. Do you think it's time to stop and let's have like a shitty quarterback go to Green Bay?
I think you guys need to do all you can to lure Aaron to come play with you guys.
Yeah, you said before when we were about to start, and you're like, you know, it's less about the Packers, more about the Bears, and it's true. Like, it's the Bears getting in their own way consistently throughout the years.
Now, I'll say this. As we speak, I think there's an outside chance that Russell Wilson could go there.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tease.
That would be a huge pickup.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would happen. I don't know if they would be willing to let him go.
I could see like a three-team.
That would change the dynamics big time.
Hey, he'd be the best quarterback in Chicago Bear history, instantly.
Well, I don't know. McMahon was pretty good. So was Sid Luckman, right?
Yeah, now, Sid Luckman has all the records. And Cutler. Cutler was a bus cook guy as well.
Yeah. You know, the Bears, their best teams, when you think about it, they had an unbelievable running game and stellar defense.
Yep. Yep.
McMahon was, you know, statistically speaking, he was the grout, if you will. He held everybody together, wasn't, you know, wowing with you statistically, but he was jumping over guys. He was running. I mean, he was in the trenches. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that you need to get a guy like that. You got to get a winner. It just has to fall in place.
Yeah.
And when it happens and you'll know it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of your career. I mean, getting traded to Green Bay after being drafted by the
Falcons.
Who'd
have thought? Right. Who'd have thought? Right. So that may be what it is with the Bears.
Yeah, we need a who would have thought guy. That's
I would Mitch take next
that.
Year.
Yes, yes. Well, Brett, thank you. Everyone go listen to Bowling with Favre. It is on Podcast One. You can find it. We appreciate you joining us. And
yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Best of luck with the podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You guys have a great day.
All right. See you too.
Listen up. We've got some tea and you all are going to be obsessed. We spoke with the Abercrombie team and they told us that they were going to launch a wedding shop. Well, we lost it because, as you know, we are both getting ready to get Abercrombie and Hitched. The whole vibe of Abercrombie these days is clothes you'd wear for a perfect long weekend, and all their customers were like, hey, we spend long weekends traveling for weddings these days. And then Abercrombie was like, we love that. Let us just give you everything you could ever possibly want and love to wear for all things wedding. So they did. It has everything. Tons of dresses, jumpsuits, pants, swimsuits, pajamas, pantsuits, and all perfectly curated for different events, bachelorettes, brunches, showers, ceremonies as a guest and ceremonies as a bride, reception, and even honeymoon. It is incredible. Check out the Abercrombie Wedding Shop on Abercrombie.com. Go shop it now.
All right, breaking news. So the Bears are doing a press conference right now, and Ryan Pace actually said that he has not ruled out bringing back Mitch Trubisky.
Let's go,
yeah.
Fuck it.
Is that the six-year bump?
Fuck it, I don't care. No, it's fifth-year.
Fifth-year bump.
Fuck it, the pre-bump. I do not care. Whatever.
I mean, has he said it's an open competition?
I'd rather him than Nick Foles.
Listen,
I'll say that much.
No roster spot is guaranteed this offseason. I always love it when really shitty teams say that. Like, no one's got a spot. We're all playing for an open spot. Well, yeah, you should. You went 2-14 last year.
Yep. All right. So we have a couple segments. First up, we have King State Kings Dan Campbell. When talking about who makes the final decisions here as GM, he says, "A true alpha knows when it's time to concede."
Yes.
That's the greatest quote of all time, because he's just admitting that he might concede, but you're really conceding.
Yeah.
Because you're accepting the concession.
Yeah, if you accept the concession, then
you're a beta.
Then you took an order from the guy being alpha. Like, "You will. I'm going to alpha you without you knowing it." It's Sun Tzu shit. This is Art of War, mm-hmm. which I actually believe that we should read Art of War on this podcast.
Art of the Deal, I've already read it.
Art of War is... it's an all-time book for people that want to sound like they're smart. This is actually, it is Sun Tzu stuff. This is a Sun Tzu quote. You ready for this?
Bill Belichick.
Yeah, exactly. He says, "All warfare is based on deception. Hence, when we are able to attack, we must seem unable. When using our forces, we must appear inactive. And when we are near, we must make the enemy believe we are far away." Mm. In other words, he's saying, let them think that they're winning.
Yep.
So it's the most alpha thing ever to make. You know what? He might even be going a step further. He might even be doing this to make his GM think that he's the alpha, but meanwhile, Dan Campbell knows like exactly like the alpha is actually on this side of the table. I want him to think that he's stronger.
Well, that part's out the window because he said it out loud.
That's true.
He did say, "I'm a true alpha because I'm letting him make the decisions," but it's still a great quote.
He is saying, if you need to know a prospect's hand size, go talk to the GM. If you want to know how his kneecap tastes, talk to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. I also had a sabermetrics before we get to guys on chicks. Did you see this, Jake? Nate Oates, who actually, look at this, Synergy, is going to be on Bench Mob.
Yes.
Have you already taped it?
Tomorrow, Wednesday, so okay. I don't jinx anything.
So but, they, yes. So I just saw an article a minute ago
about the point.
So you'll like this, PFT. In the Alabama practice facility, they have four different lines. It's 1 point is for a mid-range long two, 2 points for anything at the rim,
mm-hmm.
3 points for a college three, and 4 points for a Steph / Damian Lillard kind of area.
Okay.
So he's basically teaching them or getting it out of them to stop shooting mid-range shots.
Yeah, the only thing I don't like about that is I love saying the lost art of the mid-range jumper. Like, that's something that kids need to be practicing. But
yes.
It's actually not, and they're right in terms of setting it up this way. I'd like to see 3 points for a two-handed layup or how Larry Bird used to do it. I think Larry Bird set up a scoring thing when he used to practice being like a basket is worth 1 point, an assist is worth a point too. So if you get like a clean assist with no dribbles, then that's worth more than somebody creating it on their own.
He also had this quote, "Modern basketball, you're not catching a ball and putting it on your hip and staring at the defense for 5 seconds before you do anything. That's not how basketball is played anymore. But I'm sure dad, uncle, grandpa, professional skills trainer, you're going to do all this mid-range triple threat, all this old-fashioned garbage." I love it.
Mm-hmm.
The triple threat, though, is still that still counts.
And beef, balance, eyes, position. Elbow, follow through.
Yeah.
If you see Matt Norlander of CBS tweeted it, it reflects in the game. Look at their shot chart. Zero mid-range jumpers, either layups or threes.
And Nato's a great coach. I mean, it came from Buffalo. He's unbelievable. Like, Alabama, as good as they are offensively, they're actually very good defensively, which I think that's the weird part, because you think of a fast-paced team doesn't play defense, and he's kind of proving that that's not the case.
He's a football guy, isn't he? Nate Oates. I think we had him on Football Guy of the Week at some point.
We might have. He also has really nice...
He was a math teacher, high school math teacher.
There we go.
6 years.
I like this.
I want to ask him.
He also wears great jackets.
I'm going to ask him to pick his favorite algebra, geometry, statistics. He taught all three.
Ooh. A little pro tip, say fuck, marry, kill.
Mm-hmm. I was
those three.
That's not what I do.
Yeah, Jake can't pull. F-U-C-K, marry, kill. It's harder to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to see a coach take it one step further and have, you know, they've got the GPS trackers on the players in practice anyways to see how far they run, how fast they run, all these advanced statistics. Put like a little electroshock in there. When they take a mid-range jumper, just... you know, 200 volts of electricity to the spinal column.
Just pull him out of the game. I'm sure he does. The old Bo Ryan. Bo Ryan's. I watched Bo Ryan pull guys out of a game 10 seconds into it. I love that. That's a little old school, new school coaching. Either way, I do. I like Nate Oates. He's like fun.
He's fun.
Different, right? And he Alabama plays a fun style of basketball. I do not root for Alabama because
right.
I think it's unfair. If they're really good at basketball too,
yeah,
that's
fucked up. So something.
You can't have,
yeah, right. you can't win both. It doesn't work
went to
that
the Final
way.
Four.
It's like Florida, right?
Yeah,
and 2006-07 Gators won back to back, and Tebow's on campus. We've mm-hmm. talked about everyone on campus.
So is Aaron
it's
Hernandez
like UConn
though.
Women's
so
and
you
men's.
Gotta, you can't just throw that away. Jay.
Yeah.
And Riley Cooper.
And Riley Cooper. So really, and the Pouncey brothers.
Uh-huh. Pouncey's.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people.
A guy whose interview you did not release.
Bilzy.
Who?
Danny B.
Ah, Bilzerian. Yeah, Bilzerian probably thinks that he was the alpha of all of them. Yeah, no, he is. He probably tells stories like, yeah, I tried out for the team, but, you know, I was too good. I was too fast.
I was too dangerous. I was like Sean Merriman where they wouldn't let me practice against him.
All right, guys on chicks, what?
I'd beat the shit out of him in a rough and rowdy.
Who? Dan Bilzerian?
Yeah.
Yeah, make you sign a waiver and then threaten to sue you so you can never release it.
He's tall. I mean, short.
No, he's like exactly my size. So, yeah, he's exactly short.
He's short.
Hi, PMT. My boyfriend always walks around with his hands in his pants. It doesn't matter what time of day it is or what type of conversation we are having, but he claims that he likes to keep his hand warm and cozy. Do all men do this, or is my boyfriend a weirdo?
That's a cool look.
I do it. Well, it's bad.
Yeah. Especially if you're wearing sweatpants. I don't do it when I'm wearing jeans, but if you're wearing sweatpants, it's almost it's almost like a magnet. Where your hands just end up in your pants.
The other week, I was standing in jeans, and I caught myself. I had my four fingers in both front pockets, and then I had my two thumbs in my belt loop. I looked down. I was like, this is too much.
You're cowboy.
It's too much. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much accessories going on with my fingers right now. But, yeah, if it's something that's less formal, yeah, put a hand down your pants. Not a big deal.
I feel like this person has to be European, so I'll read it in a British accent. I recently started dating a guy, and whenever we go out drinking, he has an ego problem where he will pay the clubs to pee on the floor or to pee on someone's shoes. I don't think he remembers he's such an arse in the morning, and to be fair, he is paying thousands of dollars to do it. Is this a red flag?
I love that accent because you said it was a European accent, and it was literally a combination of like British, Polish, Italian, and Russian, yeah, all in one.
Bilingual, not a big deal.
If this is real, I'm in for it just because I'm assuming that this guy is rich if he's paying thousands of dollars for it. And I also make the assumption that super, super rich people, they just get bored with regular life, so they need new challenges. And a new challenge is, how many floors can I piss on?
Mm-hmm. And they also think that money can actually take care of anything that they do wrong.
Right.
And the ultimate test of that is, can I go into this place and then use the bathroom, turn the entire club into the bathroom for the right price? And that's true. That ultimately, the goal of getting rich is to do whatever you want, wherever you want, all the time.
Yes.
Sup, brothers. I recently put in my Hinge profile that I'm looking for a fellow AWL, and so far, it has not helped me find a man's. What can I be doing better to attract AWLs to match with me? Can we have some sort of secret code to put in our dating app profiles so I can stop answering the question, what is an AWL?
What would the code be for a lady to say that they were... I mean, the sup always works, I think.
I think just wearing our merch, just buy all of our merch, right? That would be the best way to do it. If you are men and women, we actually have a bunch of new shirts out. Buy all of our merch. And people will be like, oh, my God, that's cool. What's that?
Or just put, we don't say that anymore.
Yeah. But really buy all the merch.
All the merch.
Trying to push
merch,
the merch
helps, yeah.
Yeah, we have St. Patrick's Day merch. We have March Madness merch. We have a Dorcher Chamber shirt. We got a bunch of merch.
I predict that if you wear women's part of my tick clothes just out on the town, you won't even need a Hinge profile.
No, yet. you'll get hit on by the sweetest dudes.
We'll be swimming in cock.
Does Billy
just think of a guy like Billy hitting on you at every bar. That's what's going to happen. You're welcome.
Speaking of Billy, does Billy get paid for his job, and is he a communist?
Not anymore.
No.
Billy doesn't get paid for his job anymore since he negotiated his way out of it. But,
yeah. No, Billy gets paid. You were getting paid when you were first intern, right?
We all paid you.
Yeah.
We paid you
some cash under the table.
Yeah. We always
paid. I got paid under the table. I've been very well taken care of.
Dude,
I have no complaints.
You hit us up. People forget that a year ago when this all started and you came back into our lives, you did one appearance on Pardon My Take and then texted us and was like, hey, guys, do you think you could help me out real quick with a little money? And I don't even think you said thank you. I think I sent you $500. You bought a PS5 with it.
Yeah. That I used to make content.
Shame on me, but be nice to Billy.
Wait. What content did you make out of it?
The UFC fight night.
Yeah, that's true. You did. That. Good point,
Billy.
Good
job.
Good point.
$500 well spent.
Be nice to Billy week.
Thank you. No, I'm very well taken care of.
And you really, like, you have a job that you can't get fired from. That's what people
Trust me, once I graduate and yeah. move in the city,
Billy has
been
promising us
stuff.
He has been promising us like this new and improved Billy the minute he graduates. You realize that you've now written yourself so many checks you have to cash.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna cash him so hard.
Okay, cool.
To be fist to fist or to be fisted, that is the question.
Pass.
To fist?
Only fisting in the face.
Oh, and okay. It's got to be Jose's. Exactly. But Billy didn't actually hit him in the face. He just laid down.
I did.
If you're gonna fist somebody, you have to be willing to kill him. You have to have that mentality. Like I'm getting into a fight.
This is a chick asking. Murder.
War mode.
I know. I'm answering for Billy. No, I say. I mean, I think it's a pretty obvious question, right? Like you want to be the one that's doing the fist. You'd rather be the hammer than the nail.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to put yourself in a chick's mind though. It's guys on chicks.
Can't do it. Too much of an alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, getting fisted is the most alpha thing ever because you're letting them think that they're the alpha. Little do they know that you gave them permission to fist you.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of fisting, this will be the last question. Hi, Small Cat and PFT. Me and my husband spent the weekend at my husband's parents' home. The guys went out drinking and left me and the other ladies alone at home. My husband's sister is a lesbian and is always flirting with me and complimenting me about my body. I never took it seriously until she got drunk and she tried making out with me. I resisted at first, but I always wanted to be with a woman and gave in. It was great, but I felt bad about cheating on my husband with his sister. Should I tell my husband or just pretend nothing happened? Also, his sister is engaged to another woman, and she told me not to tell anyone.
This is just the start of every porno that's on the front page of Pornhub right now.
This is not real. But
accidentally made out with my sister-in-law.
Yeah. If it were real, don't tell anyone. It seems like you shouldn't. It seems like there'll be a lot of feelings hurt.
I also think that the word making out is doing a lot of work here. I don't really know where that term came from. Maybe somebody can help me with that because, like, I made out with somebody. Is that? It sounds like something that someone would say in the 50s, like necking. Oh, I'm going steady with this girl and we made out.
Pinder.
I never really understood what making out meant. I guess that's just Frenching. Frenched your sister.
Making out.
Making out is a term of American origin dating back to at least 1949 and is used to refer to kissing, including extended French kissing or heavy kissing of the neck called necking, or to acts of non-penetrative sex such as heavy petting.
Dry humping.
There's also, how long should making out last? 4 to 10 minutes? What? That's a lot of making out.
Yeah, if you...
These are funny questions. Why? These are questions for people who have never made out. The why does making out feel good, along with the I don't even know, the dopamine that make you feel affection and euphoria. Kissing releases serotonin, another feel good chemical.
How to practice making out?
Is making out good for a relationship? Couples that are really good at making out together tend to have healthier relationships. Wow,
I like that. Really good at making out.
How does a guy feel after kissing a girl? Kissing improves the bonding. This. You don't even, I'd imagine, like, there's some poor, like, 13-year-old is reading all these things and then goes back to school is like, well, I felt really good because the serotonin was released in my brain. Mm-hmm. Okay, dude, you haven't made out.
Yeah, let's bring back make-out sessions. Let's bring back hickeys and dry humping. Dry humping needs to be brought back.
You're a big dry humper?
Love a dry hump.
All right, numbers and animal fact?
35.
8.
22.
18. 99.
A 2-ton bull elephant once stood its ground against a locomotive which he thought was threatening his family of elephants.
58.
Is that 58
or
85?
He died in vain trying to save his family from the locomotive. He derailed it, though.
58.
Another first timer.
Really? Are we ever going to get it?
No.
Right? I don't think so.
Oh. We are, right, Billy and Liam?
Love you guys.
Billy, bring back 69.
No.
Love you guys.
I can nice see. Billy, nice to Billy.
Love
Be
you
nice
guys. Love you guys.
Talking away. Well, I don't know what I'm to say. I'd say it anyway. Today's another day to find you shining away. I'll be coming for your love, okay? Shine away. Oh, I'll be coming for your love, okay? Take on me.
Shine away, well, I'll be coming for you anyway.